racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Hi, I'm Bob Bupker alongside Jay Randolph Jr., but he's better known as STL Golf Geek. You can follow him on Twitter. So thank you for joining us in the Groove Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. And boy, does it feel good, Jay. Phil, Tiger, both in action. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great things going on. Each and every Sunday morning, I do a show in St. Louis, Bob. And each and every Sunday morning, it seems like I'm more excited. I mean, we really, you know, I think you got to take a moment. If you're a golf fan, you obviously, you wouldn't be a golf fan or almost a golf geek if you weren't, you know, listening to the Grill Room somewhere. And I just think it's a unique time. Is it a time of a dominant player like you and I got to witness, you know, from 97 to 2009 with Tiger? No. But it is a time with so much talent and so much going on and great golf like we saw again on a Sunday afternoon. It's fantastic, Bob. I'm glad I'm alive.
Yeah. Well, it is. You put it so well, Jay. I mean, if you're a golf fan, you got to love this. But just the talent depth that's out there now, and we've discussed it before. We're going to be discussing it a lot more as we start rolling in these majors, all at outstanding venues, and then obviously the little icing on that cake when we go to the Ryder Cup come September, in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower. I mean, sure. Just fantastic stuff. So let's begin this week by simply saying from Muirfield to Mexico. That was the last win for Phil Mickelson. Hard to believe it was 2013, the Open Championship, 97 starts ago that he won. And listen to this one, Jay, figured it out. It was over 40,000 hours between victories for Phil Mickelson. And when you think of a 40-hour work week and then you say 40,000 hours, it puts it in some perspective. But quite frankly, he's been telling us all along that, he was getting closer. He worked really hard this off season, and, boy, we saw every bit of that down in Mexico City.
I'm glad you pointed it out because you and I have commented after listening to Phil – the last couple of weeks. Now, he had that interesting scenario where a lot of the guys went down to Florida to play at PGA. Phil went from Riviera to Mexico, similar type surface, similar type green surface. He had said, at Riviera, Phil gave something up that I thought was interesting. He said in his post-round interview that he felt like he needed to win before Augusta. You know, and he's only going to, he knew at that point he was only going to have two or three starts before Augusta. And he comes out and wins in dramatic fashion. And what was even more crazy is essentially the guy who's been the best player in the world for the last 9 months, Justin Thomas. No offense to Dustin Johnson with the world ranking, but Justin Thomas holds out and shoots the 2-day total he did. Yet in the playoff, the Mexican fans are going nuts for Phil instead of the young gun who's on the rise. It was awesome.
Well, it really was, and we got to watch Phil at his best. A lot of times playing out of the trees, where he is very comfortable. Short game, probably nobody's ever played the game with a better short game. Let's give a listen right now, Jay, to Phil as he addresses the fact that he openly admits he was nervous and backs up what you said about leading into Augusta.
I was certainly nervous heading into today's round, the pre-round warm-up, all that stuff. That's all part of it, though, and that's what's exciting, and that's what's so fun, and that's what I've missed. I've really missed that nervous feeling coming into a Sunday, and I've been starting to feel it a little bit lately, but to really be in the last group and to see what the guys are doing and know what the final score is and know what I have to do, that's a great feeling to have. It's just been too long. It's important, I think, to have a win in a tournament, especially a big tournament like a World Golf Championship, before the majors, because you don't want to feel that type of pressure coming down the stretch of a major, having not won in a while. You want to remember what it feels like to win. And so this was an important week.
You know, that excellent point by Phil there. You know, he dearly would love to win the Masters again, but, you know, he's won that a couple of times. I think what he really meant was, you know, he's going to have an excellent shot if everything stays on track when we get to my old stomping grounds, Shinnecock, because Phil, you know, he said, you know, and he's so, it's so true. You don't want to go to try and win your first U.S. Open when you haven't tasted victory this year, especially in a big event. And now he's over that mountain. I think at this point, he's right on track for that big day coming up in June.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Bob, because if he wouldn't have won prior to Augusta, then, you know, after Augusta, he'd have changed his tune to saying, like you said, what is number one, and that's the U.S. Open. I had a debate with somebody the other day that told me that Walter Hagen was in their top 10 and Phil Mickelson wasn't, and I put Phil in my top 10. And I think this maybe even adds a little cushion to that, winning at 47 and playing the type of golf he has. I mean, you know, gosh darn it, as much as I love Tiger Woods, the fact that Phil Mickelson has the real potential to win the Grand Slam at Shinnecock, and having done a majority of it during the Tiger era, it maybe makes Phil's case even stronger.
You know, and digging through some stuff, Jay, is that we get ready for all our grill room shows leading up to the majors and whatnot. I really went through the books and taking a look at Phil, and some things that I came up with can be traced right back to the fact that he had to play alongside of Tiger. But Phil Mickelson has never been the number one golfer in the world. Phil Mickelson has never been the leading money winner in any given year. Phil Mickelson has never been player of the year. I mean, you know, because we worked with him, we can add a little more insult to injury. When he came out in 1992 as a rookie, he didn't win rookie of the year. Our old buddy Mark Carnevale was rookie of the year. And here he is now at 47, having never done any of that stuff. And I'm behind you 100%. Phil Mickelson's got to be regarded as one of the top 10 players ever to play this game, no matter what else he does. And I think there's big things ahead of him. You know what impressed me the most, Jay, and I want your take on it, that putting stroke. I mean, it looked pure. He was surprised when he missed. And, you know, the last couple of years, it seemed more like he was surprised when he made it.
I first saw Phil Mickelson when I was 15 years old in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. And he was playing, we were both playing the same junior tournament, Bob, and he set the course record at Edgewood Tahoe in State Line, Nevada. This is a guy that has been doing it for a long, long, long time. And, you know, still seems to always be changing a little bit. You know, changing the putting stroke, doing this or that. The fact that it was his first win without Jim Bones McKay. Bones was covering the event, and his brother was on the bag, and no Butch. And, you know, Phil Mickelson might win four or five more times before it's over. He's that good.
Well, what was amazing is that he had a feeling about this victory. He knew how hard he was working. He knew where his game was tracking, and this is what he had to say.
I knew it was going to happen soon. I didn't know if it would be this week. I didn't know if it would be today. I had confidence that it was going to happen, and it means a lot to me to do it now, especially before Augusta. I really, as I said earlier, I needed to get a win before Augusta so that I wasn't trying to win for the first time in 4.5, 5 years at that event. And this certainly boosts my confidence and gives me a lot of encouragement on the things I've been working on. And I'm very optimistic and believe that this is just a stepping stone of some more good things to come. I feel like I'm starting to play some of my best golf again.
It's just amazing, Jay. I go back to his amateur days. I believe it was at Cherry Hills. I'm pretty sure it was in the final match to win the United States Amateur.
It was.
His opponent putted first and knocked it up about 10 feet short of the hole. Phil had a 15-footer for birdie. He told his opponent, pick it up, that's good. The opponent looked at him like he was crazy, but quickly picked up the ball, and Phil rolled in the 15-foot putt for birdie to go one up. That match was over right then and there. But, you know, that's how good Phil Mickelson was. And, you know, he admits maybe he lost some mental focus over the last couple of years. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's awfully hard. I mean, obviously, he's a multi-millionaire. He's got a growing family. He gave up playing in a U.S. Open just to attend his daughter's graduation when it was at Erin Hills. I mean, there's been a lot of water underneath that Phil Mickelson bridge, and to watch him play like he did this past weekend, man, it just was so exciting.
Bob, you and I know all too well because we've been out there and what it's like, and there are some detractors of Phil, and there's a contingent that thinks he might not be as kind or as graceful as he comes across. But you and I have been there and seen him sign autographs for 2 hours after a round. And that says something to me, and the emotion that he showed. And I'll tell you what, for those people that think Phil's fake, let me tell you something. If he's fake, he's doing a great job hiding it in these news conferences and these press conferences the last couple of weeks, because I think he's given up a lot of himself as a golfer and as a person. So, you know, you and I could sense this coming, and so could he. And congratulations to him. I mean, Justin Thomas, my goodness, he shoots 62, 64, holes out on the 72nd hole. And at that point, he had a 2-shot lead. And you're thinking, well, you know, another anointment for this kid. And Mickelson had the wherewithal to take him down.
Well, when he holed out from the fairway on that 72nd hole, I don't know this to be true, but I think Jimmy Johnson, his caddy, whipped out his cell phone, called his banker and said, get ready, there's going to be another big deposit coming your way next week. But Jimmy Johnson was so excited about that hole out, and what a shot it was. And let's give a listen to Justin Thomas. This is what he had to say after losing in that playoff.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, if you would have told me I would have been in a playoff after 2 rounds, I would have told you you were lying. But I played unbelievable golf these last 2 days. I'm probably more proud of myself than I ever have been. It takes a lot of patience and just kind of calmness for me to stay in it as much as I did. But I'm really happy for Phil.
Yeah, we want to give Golf Channel a big thank you for that audio of Justin Thomas, but he showed a lot of class there, Jay, and he is a classy guy, and it's easy to understand. His father's a golf pro. His grandfather's a golf pro. He's been around the game for a long time, and boy, oh boy, is he talented.
The cushion man. I remember after he won the $10 million from the FedEx Cup that he said it's a nice cushion. You know, this kid is so good. A lot of players, as you know, Bob, if they kind of just make the cut or they're kind of having a bad week, they play out the string. Not this kid. I mean, he wasn't sure exactly how it happened, but it happened. And maybe it was after getting the video lesson from his dad and doing a little talking to our man Jimmy. And Justin Thomas is as good as it gets. And Dustin Johnson tying for seventh at this tournament. Sergio tying for seventh. Spieth not putting well, and he still finishes tied for 14th. So many good things are happening. It's phenomenal.
When you look at that Spanish connection, we say Sergio, but boy, oh boy, John Rahm and Rafa at Bello, who I got to meet, was introduced to him last year at Match Play. I spoke to him again earlier this year down at Honda. An awfully nice guy. He's got a wealth of talent. I see Bello winning out there very shortly. And Tyrrell Hatton from England, another talented guy. TV was really hard on him.
How about his temper, Bob? He was. I mean, now that's old school. I mean, he you don't see that much today. And you know, like you said, some of the commentators didn't like. I mean, I kind of liked it because I thought it was good theater. I understand what those commentators are saying, that it can be possibly counterproductive. But as you and I know, there's some guys that have different ways of motivating themselves.
Well, certainly you want to go way back. Tommy Bolt played a lot better when he was upset with himself. But Hatton is the real deal. And another guy there, Tommy Fleetwood, watch out for him. I'm telling you, this guy really, really has a lot of talent. We're running out a little bit of time in this segment here. So why don't we just spend a minute or two, Jay, and give a big shout out to Michelle Wee. Boy, oh boy, what she has endured in her career. I met her when she was 12 years old. She actually played around with Tom Lehman in Hawaii at the Sony, and Tom Lehman told me at that time that she had incredible talent. She qualified to play in a women's amateur, Jay, when she was 10 years old.
10.
I mean, come on. I mean, girls 10, lucky if they can finish their coloring book. Forget about qualifying to play in the women's amateur. And you know, she's had her struggles with the putting and this, that, and the other thing. But, boy, she looked good in winning. It's her first LPGA win in 3 years. She did win the women's open, though. I mean, that's always going to be on her record. But I think she could have a monster year now, too.
I think there's more to come. I think there's more majors to come. You know, you and I saw a lot of different things with her, and there were a lot of things in the background and all kind of stuff. And, you know, this girl's a fighter. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You talk about it would have been real easy to shut it down and have a big crib in Hawaii, and but not her. She's just fighting through it, and I give her – I mean, to play the final round the way she did, make that 35-footer on the last hole, and let me tell you something. The LPGA got more attention from that win than they've gotten from a win in a long time.
No, you're right about that, and you brought up a good point there, Jay, about – she could have shut it down at any point. But when you look back at her, she has never chosen the easy route. When she was a teenager, she just kept insisting that she wanted to play on the men's tour. Was that realistic? Probably not, but it certainly was a high goal. But what was realistic, she said she wanted to go to Stanford. She could have gone to a heck of a lot easier school and just focused on golf, because that was where her future was going to be. But she went to a school very demanding on the academics, graduated from there. I mean, she has done more good for ladies golf than just about anybody that's playing the game right now. And, boy, you know, I know you join me in giving a huge grill room salute to Michelle Wee for that victory, and to do it in dynamic fashion. That was fun to watch.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Talk Sport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias.
History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Hot topic, we're talking about hot topic, you see. Hot topic, we're talking about hot topic.
Welcome back to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. I'm Jay Randolph Jr. You can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek, and my man, the VOG, Bob Bupka, alongside. And Bob, a topic that has been talked about for a while, but seems to be building some more steam, is maybe scaling back the golf ball for the best players in the world, the pros and the top amateurs. And it's something that's kind of always lingering there, but nothing's been done yet.
Well, nothing has been done yet, and I'm not convinced anything ever is going to be done. It seems like, let's just lay out some blueprints for our listeners to get a better feel for what's going on. The United States Golf Association, in conjunction with the RNA, are doing all this investigation about how much further the golf ball is being driven now versus 2003 and whatnot. And you know, there's certain elements involved here, Jay, and our listeners are very fortunate because we have you. Because I'm going to explain what I mean there. You know, the professionals, the PGA of America has weighed in on it. They're going to solicit what their 29,000 club professionals have to say about the situation. Jay Monahan, heading up the PGA Tour, replacing the retired Tim Fincham, what he has to say. But Jay, the perspective that you can bring the listeners, and one that I'm keenly interested in hearing, is, you know, the average player. I mean, you're the ambassador at one of the great golf courses in the middle of the country, right there in St. Louis, Normandy. Yep. What kind of reaction do you think you would get from the people, you know, the backbone of the game of golf, the average player that goes out and enjoys himself on the weekend? What type of reaction do you think you would get if you had to tell your players, you got to use a golf ball, it's not going to go as far?
You know, there'd be mass confusion. There'd be misunderstanding. And I think that, you know, it's almost an issue that players that watch professional golf, or probably carry a handicap, or at one time maybe carried a handicap under 10. Now, we are talking about maybe 5% of the people that play golf, if that. Now, I mean, remember what I just said, about 5% under a 10 handicap. So, Bob, it doesn't affect those players that come out and play on a Sunday afternoon. One area I do find it interesting and is in our Saturday morning skins game, where we've got some guys that are one or two handicaps or seven or eights, but we've also got some 12 or 13s that I don't know should have any reason to use a pro ball, but that maybe that one or two handicap player wants to use the pro ball because he needs to use the pro ball or the ball because he plays in amateur events. So there's a lot of confusion that could be you know, tough on some of the people that play golf in a situation where they really shouldn't even care. You know what I mean?
Well, Jay, he is confusing sometime, but right now, let's see if he can shed a little light on what we're talking about. We want to welcome Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of The Morning Read, coming to us on the Vertical Groove Hotline, and here's what he had to say. Alex Maselli, the big buzz in the world of golf right now, certainly the issue over distance and rolling back the golf ball. You've had a lot of stuff in Morning Read about that. Just need your take on what's transpiring.
Well, I think my take is pretty simple. The question is why? Why would you take away length and distance from not only the professionals, which everybody wants to see hit the ball long, but also from the amateurs as well? So I don't really understand it. All I do know is that the USGA and the RNA seem to have a burr under their saddle about this, and they're going to do what they can to try to rein in equipment, thinking that that's the way to go. And I can only say that if I was a person like Jay Monahan, commissioner of the PGA Tour, who doesn't want to put my $350 million purses in jeopardy or my $180 million in charitable contributions in jeopardy, that would not be the way I would go about it.
Thank you for your time, Alex. Talk to you next week.
Well, while I understand what Alex is saying, I do think we have to talk about the fact that there are a lot of golf courses that these guys, they can't come to Normandy. Dustin Johnson would shoot 15 under. He'd shoot 56 because it's not long enough. I mean, and that's what the USGA and the RNA are trying to prevent in a way. Now, it is very confusing if you had a player's ball, if we said that was used in the Sonny Hanna Amateur or the North Dakota Open or the American Junior Golf Association. But I do think, Bob, you will admit, and I think Alex would admit if he was on with us, that there are some golf courses that you can't hold a professional event at anymore.
But here's the problem as I see it, though, Jay. If we continue along this path, the golf courses have to get longer,
right,
to be as challenging as they need be. Now, what happens when a golf course gets longer? It takes more time to play, which is a problem of its own. One of the major complaints in the game is that it takes too long to play. So we can't make the golf courses longer and hope to play faster. So it is a very, very tricky situation. I fully understand that nobody wants to hit the ball a shorter distance. But, you know, there are so many great well-conceived short holes in golf, whether it be a par 3 or a par 4. Case in point, familiar to everybody, certainly would be the 10th hole at Riviera, yep. A par 4. But, you know, it's a little over 300 yards. But it doesn't mean you're going to make a 4 there. I mean, you might make a 3 and you might make a 6. So if we have more holes like that, we can kind of preserve the golf courses we have. The challenge would be up, and the time spent playing golf would be considerably less. I mean, obviously, that's an ideal world. Can we accomplish that? That remains to be seen.
But you don't want to do any. You don't want to do anything until you know what you're gonna do. And I think they're doing the research on it now. And the one factor, Bob, that we haven't talked about is the golf ball manufacturers themselves. I mean, think of the money that they spend on research and development. Think of the money that they make off their premium golf balls. And then all of a sudden to be told, here's how you got to build the golf ball. And this is the only way you can build the golf ball because we're putting a cap on it. That would be very difficult for a lot of manufacturers to accept. And they spend a lot of money on the game. So there are a lot of factors in this other than just the fact that the best players in the world And the younger players in the game are hitting it a tremendous length. But, you know, so was Jack Nicklaus hitting it a tremendous length in 1960 for that era.
No, you're right, Jay. And, you know, I was just trying to think of other sports where, you know, guys are hitting it further. You know, look at the Rookie of the Year last year for the New York Yankees, a guy by the name of Aaron Judge. I mean, he's about 6'7", he's about 240. I mean, you would never see a guy, you know, think of Yogi Berra, who maybe was 5'6", 160. You know, I mean, so as the athletes get bigger and stronger and in better condition, you know, there was no way. I mean, I love Jack Dealey, but I know this much. Jack, Arnie, and Lee Trevino, after a round of golf, if you wanted to find him to save your life, the first place you would look certainly wouldn't be in the gym. I mean.
And at one time, all three of them had a pack of smoke somewhere. So, you know, it is certainly different. You know, and Bob, there are a lot of people that believe in Major League Baseball, and that the ball is juiced. There are people that swear that the Major League Baseball is hotter than it was 5 years ago, after the decline in hopefully less performance enhancing drugs, with home runs. So, you know, and that's the other, you know, maybe it would be great to have a tournament at Normandy with the best players in the world and see how they found a way to shoot, I don't know, 50 under for 18 holes. I don't know. But I think we've got to come to the realization that there are some golf courses that can no longer hold professional tournaments or high-level amateur tournaments because of the distance that these guys have it. And again, you know, how big a deal is it to Joe and Jill Public, who come out once a month on a Sunday afternoon to Normandy or to XYZ golf course? They could care less.
Yeah, I mean, that's the quagmire that golf really is in now. And I don't know if anybody has the answer. You know, I certainly believe with my heart that the RNA and the USGA, they want to do what's best for the game. But, you know, the average TV fan loves to hear about a 350-yard drive. Even the guys that play the game, you know, when they hear about a 350-yard drive, even though they can drive it maybe if they kill it 175, they like the fact that somebody can hit the golf ball that far. So what do you do? I mean, I don't know. You know, some of the best brains in this game are, you know, spending a lot of time, a lot of money, but we don't seem to be going in any particular direction. There doesn't seem to be an end line in sight.
And I will agree with that, and that's part of the problem. But let's think about it in this respect for just a second. Let's say tomorrow Michael Jordan and LeBron James held a news conference and said, you got to take a little bit of air out of the basketball. It's making it easier for guys to make long passes. We have had Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods both say they've got to do something about the golf ball. Now, when the two greatest players in your game say that, the governing bodies have to at least listen, right?
Point well said. We probably could talk about this for hours, but we have some important stuff to get to, so we're going to take a brief timeout. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf. It's the new face of golf. After the break, we'll groove up with Vertical Groove Golf and then preview the Valspar Championship.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. I'm Jay Jr., he's Bob Bubka, and it's time to groove up with Vertical Groove Golf. A little look at the PGA Tour champions last week for Vertical Groove Golf Clubs. Both Doug Garwood and Rocco Mediate finished in the top five of the Color Guard Classic, played at the Omni Tucson National in Tucson. And it seems like every week a PGA Tour champions player at the top of the leaderboard means that Vertical Groove is working. Doug Garwood, 80% of the fairways last week in Tucson using the Vertical Groove driver. And Steve Stricker recorded his first PGA Tour victory at the Color Guard Classic last week. Good stuff from Steve, but great stuff from our friends at Vertical Groove Golf and those players like Doug Garwood, who says, you know what? I'm going to use it because it works, not because you pay me. Vertical Groove Golf, the Vertical Groove driver, and the 3-wood. Check it out at vertgolf.com.
And, you know, Jay, Rocco Mediate playing in Tucson last week, he hit 75% of his fairways and another top five finish. And after a visit down to the headquarters in Jupiter, Florida for Vertical Groove Golf, finally I've come up with a way that will help explain to our listeners why that Vertical Groove Club works. Just think of the tires on your car. It wouldn't be a lot of fun driving down the highway if the grooves were going left to right. You want them going in the direction that the car is going, and that's why the vertical grooves on your driver are going in the direction that you want the golf ball to go. Try it. You'll like it. Just go to vertgolf.com to order yours. All right, Jay, now let's take a look at this week's Valspar Championship. What a field, but we can say that automatically once TW has agreed to play. Looks like he's putting it in high gear, trying to get ready for Augusta.
No doubt about it. Back-to-back weeks, playing the Palmer Invitational. I mean, he's healthy, so he's playing. And he knows the more he plays, the more comfortable he gets. You got Adam Hadwin, who played so wonderful last year. Jordan Spieth is in the field. Be nice to see Bill Haas back after the horrific car accident that he was involved in, and probably be nice for Bill to get back in a PGA Tour event after what he endured out there in L.A.
Yeah, certainly. Just a horror show for Bill Haas. Certainly one of the good guys out there. Rory McIlroy is going to be playing at Valspar, and he's starting to feel a little heat. His game nowhere near what he needs to bring down Magnolia Lane. We can't lose sight of the fact that Rory McIlroy, we talked a little earlier in the show about Phil Mickelson trying to complete his Grand Slam by winning the U.S. Open. Rory McIlroy is in that boat. He can complete it by getting a green jacket in his locker. I just think Rory McIlroy is just so good that game's going to come around.
But Bob, you are right. You know how those folks are in the U.K. and in Europe. I mean, there are people calling Rory out saying he's not ready for the Masters. I think it's a little too soon, but the British press and the Irish press are hitting him a little hard. Speaking of an Irishman, Padraig Harrington is going to be playing along with Graham McDowell. Keep Gary Woodland in your sights, especially for your DraftKings teams. He's a former champion, and I'm going to give you a guy that I just had a weird feeling about this week, Bo Hostler. Let's see how Bo does this week.
And my eyes are going to be focused on Henrik Stenson. I think he's going to come back with a vengeance. 3-woods work awfully well on that Copperhead course.